Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.
Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Sings, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was 30 minutes returning to America for the two final weeks of the road to WrestleMania. A later WrestleMania year than usual, right around the corner as we rush into the final setups. And by final setups, I mean both shows making me go, God damn it, for God's sake, for two different reasons. SmackDown had the immediately infamous Flair and Stratton promo, and Monday Night Raw had Tony freaking Hinchcliffe, for God's sake, God damn it, God damn it. To both shows. That was a choice on Raw. You decided to split your audience down a line like that. Oh, we got the lefties by putting Tony Hinchcliffe on. The lefties are your fans paying you money. Why split your audience? I don't get it. I'll get into that later. I'll get into that later. I watch AEW. I can just drift away into whatever story they're telling. I watch WWE, and I feel like every single week there's something which is just in my face, unavoidably tied to like the political world that they're doing. Every week there's something. It's very easy workaround. Just don't book a guy like that. Just don't do it. You don't split your audience into having to make a decision about something. But anyway, SmackDown was in Chicago, Illinois, as the version I watched was 2 hours 5 minutes on Netflix and on USA for the Americans. Now, before I do jump straight in, I need to bloody add the newsletter to my things at the start. Huge shout out to Tim. Huge shout out to Trish for the newsletter which has gone up on Social Suplex. Please do go out in the link that I've put in to the descriptions of this already. Just make sure to give the newsletter some love. It is an amazing adventure by Trish and amazing work by Tim Hunter as well. So highly recommend going there, seeing all the different works of all the different writers that are coming in. It's this very exciting thing to be happening here on Social Suplex at the moment. Go in there and read the amazing work by the amazing writers that Trish has wrangled. Wrangled isn't the word, they did it willingly. Anyway, let's jump on over, I promise. Let's jump on over to Friday Night SmackDown, Chicago, Illinois for, oh boy, Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte Flair. Let's dig into this. Let's get into this.
WrestleMania, Charlotte, and when it's all said and done, you're gonna be just like you are outside of the ring, alone. What is that record? Like what? 0-3?
I do kind of feel bad playing that clip. Like, I am so sorry that I subjected you all to listening to that. I am so sorry. So I watched this on a Tuesday. You gotta get that post AEW pay-per-view whiplash. You gotta feel it. I can't feel it if I watch it before the show. But I had obviously seen the reaction to this over the weekend. It was unavoidable. And oh man, not every feud needs a shooty-shoot promo. But from week one, this WrestleMania Blonde showdown has seemed void of ideas. A shoot wasn't earned. Plus, Cody and Cena had already given us our feel for the week, meaning the crowd aren't even hungry for one. Then, on the back foot, you end up trying to force it, like punting a long ball in hope more than expectation. And yeah, of course, it just gets headed out of play, or even worse, you lose possession. And that's exactly what happened here, depending on how well you followed that football analogy. Moderated by Barrett, but taken off the rails by Charlotte, and the currently not great off script and improvising Stratton, but she came loaded. She came equipped with something in case things went down. Whatever point Flair seemed to be implying, whatever backstage game she was playing in front of us, I wouldn't say that Tiffy was the one who came out looking the worst. I mean, neither come out looking great, but obviously I don't know what the drama is, but evidently we're seeing something spill over onto the screen in a pretty unprofessional, crappy way. Because, yeah, we already know that Tiffany's a rookie with a little green, but it feels like Charlotte should have... She got rocked. She was the one that got rocked by the live crowd and went into all trying to improvise with them, when the entire story they're telling would purposely get the crowd to boo Charlotte more and get behind Tiffy. So the fact that she seemed to get a reaction from that and just get completely rattled by it was... It seemed strange. For minute one, this entire segment just felt strange. But in this, Flair seemed to change track in the face of Chicago's great heat. I've read that as a good thing at first. Why change track? The heat is what you want, right? Well, Flair seemed to read it differently. And again, she gets rocked by it. You can see it just happening in the promo. She starts addressing the crowd more and more to a point where Tiffy's trying to say her lines. And Charlotte is just in a world of her own. Like, Tiffy Stratton is out there stranded by her dance partner, essentially. But the design of this was also a heavily scripted shoot back and forth. When you were my age, Charlotte, you were trying to be a volleyball player and drinking in your daddy's basement. Crowd goes, oh. Flair does a weird smile thing. I think the thing that got me the most was Tiffy would say her scripted line and Flair was essentially no-selling it. She was in her own world with this. For me, this was the first time I ever saw a WWF wrestler say the word shit and get no response. Built up to it, built up to Tiffany Stratton saying it, and it got no reaction. But part of that is that Charlotte Flair is immediately, like, without a beat missed, just going, ooh, 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 ooh. She was mocking Tiffy. That's where she mocks Tiffany Stratton's high-pitched voice. I knew it was something along the lines of, remember, I can't remember it specifically, but yeah, it's basically her mocking Tiffany Stratton, which again, fictions a character, relatively fine, but she's given no beat at all for the crowd to react to the swear word being said, even though it got built up to. Completely treading all over it. It's like, that's not right. Yeah, sure, there's the lines that come later which feel a bit off and she's improvising all the lines, but from a, like, dance partner point of view where you're doing this segment together, Charlotte's not dancing with her partner. Like, she is not there with her right now. If she's, like, riffing off the crowd, that's fine, whatever, but she's actively making Tiffany Stratton look bad by stepping over her lines and not letting her get there, which is bad in terms of, like, performing together. And good God, the ending just hurtled towards the blow-up and the young champion just getting out of there as Charlotte's stared down the barrel of the camera in the ring. What's the matter, Charlotte? Cat got your tongue? A line that Flair herself said to Alexa Bliss in another promo that got derailed back when. Like, I'm surprised I remember that. That felt like the kind of reference which should go right over my head, especially given the era of WWE it came from, where aren't that many quips that you remember. I was like, oh, I swear I remember that. I swear that's an Alexa Bliss thing. And I googled it just to make sure. I wasn't confident in it. That's a better way of saying it, actually. Like, I recognised it. I thought it was from a Bliss thing. Wasn't sure. So I did get... I'm not nerdy enough to be, like, certain. I'm nerdy enough to be to remember it. Yeah. I'm not on the high ground here. You'll be just like you are outside the ring, alone. What's your record now? 0-3. That was the line she had in the barrel in case, I don't know, shit went down. Which we base that next question of, but why did she come out of quits with that? It gets out of the ring very quickly after saying that. And that's where her music plays very quickly as well. And Charlotte Flair is then staring down the barrel of the camera. And Charlotte tried to get in the last line. Is that why Kaiser's in my DMs? And on Monday Night Raw, they played it a bit with a Kaiser interview during the ad break. That's why I say a little bit. It's like a kind of addressing it, but not really, where Kaiser just then didn't say anything about it and used it to instead talk about how great of a rising wrestler he is on Monday Night Raw. But this segment, just absolutely atrocious. Just Jesus Christ. That's kind of why I decided to play the clip. Like, so you've heard it yourself, and the tape has done its own talking. Charlotte, the experienced one, seemed to get so derailed by the crowd, and Tiffy isn't experienced enough to improvise when the verbal dance partner isn't on script at all. I mean, she did have the best off-script line in the end, but, like, that hardly mattered at that point. The segment's completely fallen on its arse. That stare down the barrel from Flair spoke volumes. Like, whatever backstage issues there are just bled right out in front of the camera in the most, like, unprofessional ways. And I honestly just felt bad for Stratton, the performer. Like, Flair mocking her high-pitched voice seemed completely off-script as Tiffy was trying to get her lines out. I mean, as I said, neither of them came out of this well, but it felt so clear, like, which one had just stopped dancing and left her segment partner astray to essentially dance alone as she did her own off-script thing. I can't read into why that happened. All I can see is that it did. And watching the segment, it just read that Charlotte just got rocked by the crowd and left her dance partner astray. It just in a, I don't know what part of the chant specifically rattles her. I don't know how that happened. But that stare down the barrel afterwards, like, it just wraps up the strangeness so much, as in still seemingly rocked and not entirely there by what the crowd's response by it. Like, it's very strange. That said, you just go over to Reddit and you'll see wrestling fans turning themselves in a twist as to whether or not this was a shoot. Like, even with WWE themselves deleting the video, it's like, but I got an emotional response to it, and now the feeling of it, therefore it must have been a work. It's like, I'm watching this just being like, one of them stopped dancing, and you can just see the segment start to break down from that point onwards. in a way, it's almost like a got watched by something, had a mental blip, and it just completely fell off the rails after that. I think my main critique from it, really, it says from like a creative point of view, is that this segment wasn't earned. This rivalry has not earned a shooty shoot promo, especially on a week where the fans have already been fed happy with the Cody Cena shooty shoot promo. They're not hungry for one. And this is a feud that's not earned it. And that's why I use the analogy, you've pumped a long ball forward, but you're not playing Andy Carroll. You got flipping, I don't know, Darius Vassell. He's not going to hold the ball up. why are you putting a long ball up to him? Like Sean Wright Phillips. I can only think of Diddy England players. Why are you putting a long ball up to him? He's not going to be able to hold it up. The opposition playing Mertesacker. He's going to get it headed back to you. What are you doing? The feud, yeah, what we'd seen for the feud itself hadn't earned this anyway, even if it went to script. So I probably wouldn't be reviewing it that highly anyway. But the segment itself, Jesus Christ. Obviously, like, do hit me up if you read the segment differently. But that was my reading. Charlotte Flair got rocked and stopped dancing. And she's left in a segment where it's like, you're dancing together here on the rhythm of it. She just left Tiffany Stratton astray. Then whenever she does come back, it's weird and it's not selling what Tiffany Stratton is saying. And it just felt like the entire time that it was Charlotte Flair breaking down the segment, and then Tiffany eventually goes, sod it. And I don't know if part of that is down to the inexperience of not really being able to improvise to a certain level yet. That's not anything the fans don't know. The fans are behind Tiffany Stratton a lot because of the potential. So even what Charlotte Flair was kind of saying, like, yeah, but that's not going to get any of the fans to turn on her. Which feels so odd, because that's the actual story they're trying to tell. All I can see is something bled onto the screen, and the segment was atrociously shit. Atrociously bad. The only correct call was for Tiffany Stratton to say that line and get out quickly. Even afterwards, Flair's still doing the same thing of trying to not sell it. She's trying to get the last word, and she's the one trying to stand tall, and it completely falls on its arse. It had fallen on its face. It was so bad. Well, that was certainly quite a whiplash to come back to, you know, after I've watched the AEW Dynasty pay-per-view, seen an amazing triple threat, I've seen an absolutely incredible show, and then the main event, which, you know, I'm not massively into what's happening in the main event, but everything else in the rest of the show, an amazing time. I come back to SmackDown, and it's this. It's just like, what's going on? I feel like, because it was impossible to go into this blind, because obviously this blew up over the weekend. Everybody just having their takes, and it's now become like the clickbait video thing that you see on YouTube. I don't think I ever will watch a Stevie Richards video, but I know it's become a clickbait thing that he'll be talking about it, the Bischoffs, whatever. That'll be their thumbnail talking about this segment, which makes sense when it's such a blatant blowing up of something backstage bleeding onto the screen. It's the type of shit that online fans really like to dig into and just go on about. But go on about it, I have too much. So let's jump on over to CM Punk, who opened the show. Mrs. Chicago Man opened the show because they were in Chicago. The hometown hero was all happy with his Chicago people, Chicagoans, name-dropping all the locations and businesses to pop the crowd. He's not supposed to be here, but he's the main event of WrestleMania. You deserve it, chant. Ladies and gentlemen, I've earned it. A mini thank you tour for Chicago, promising to put in the hard work so he can whip Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns' asses at WrestleMania. When Paul Heyman's ladies and gentlemen interrupted to a lovely pop, bringing that favour to the forefront via a full CM Punk second half of 2024 recap. Hey, you got it. But that was longer now. You got time to fill. Setting up the latest segment with Roman, where we all got to learn what exactly that favour is. Huzzah! They finally figured it out themselves. Let's see what they come up with, shall we? Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and CM Punk. Ahead of time, whilst watching for the tribal chief in the parking lot, Heyman just straight up said that he's going to say yes to whatever the favour is. Like, he says yes, whatever it is. Let's just get it over with. Well, there's the drama set up for the shocked, oh no, faces later. The same order as before. Roman out first to get that acknowledgement from the crowd. Rollins as the disruptor, and Punk the lad that gets to hit that final plot beat line. The wise man, the focus of Punk's words, of his loyalty, of OVW and ECW, of the words Heyman gave to Punk when the man was set to leave WWE in 2006, forcing Roman out of his comfort zone. The favour, Paul Heyman must be in CM Punk's corner at WrestleMania. Roman's response for me, so great. Too cocky to believe Heyman could possibly love another client as much as he loves him. Perfect to do this in a city that loves CM Punk like they do as well. Are you crying? As Heyman went into full acting mode. Really drew out getting to the man finally speaking and telling Roman no. And we've seen how cruel Reigns can get when he's told no. Just not as much recently as he's been this more babyface character, but this was a great reminder here. He is still that same guy. He's convinced the fans to cheer him, but the character hasn't changed that much. He's still got that cruelness in him. The threat of violence there, but Punk made the jump before anything could happen to Punchy Punch and GTS to send us off the air with Seth Rollins all all happy and stuff there as well. Seth Rollins gets a bigger focus on Monday Night Raw, because he's kind of in the background here, just watching it all play out, seeing everything fall apart. And on Monday Night Raw, he steps in with his play. But we'll get to that when we get to Monday Night Raw. And I feel like I'll talk about that in a bit more detail, in terms of like everything that's happening over the course as well. Because it does very much feel like trying to come up with a decent hindsight booking when they created it, they didn't really know what it was going to be. It was just more like a storyline hook. They didn't really know what it was going to be. It was more like, we'll get to the guy that the detective is looking for who murdered his family. We'll get to him eventually. But here's like an amusement park murder he's got to solve first with no relation. But we'll get to it. Got the episodic weirdy stuff to get out first. And that's what I'll do. I'll jump through the rest of it, then I'll get to the main plot. Rey Fénix's debut. Rey Fénix versus Nathan Fraser. Solid idea to play the Fénix VTRTs ahead of the ad break with the crowd audio turned up as well. So not only are you seeing the promo package play for somebody's coming out next, you get to hear the fans' excitement. Lots of flashy lights and fire pyro. Thematically, very similar and house style fitting with his brother as well. Even his logo is basically the same as Penta's. As for the action, NXT's Nathan Fraser was given the spot to fly with the man. Not going full jobber and given his own opportunities to jump. Then we got our WWE branding for Fénix's moveset. The goodbye amigo kick for his run across the top rope punt. Was not expecting a fire driver though. Was not expecting that at all. Somebody in Blue Sky perfectly putting it as, you can take the man out of AW. But yeah. Mexican muscle buster spanned Fraser down into the final driver for the win. He then got a post-match interview with Byron Saxton to a T, repeating what worked for Penta's debut. And it seems to have been just as effective, saying he's got a lot of history in Chicago, but now he is in WWE. Arrivor! Then we fade to Legado del Fantasma backstage as they let Berto show some fire. Hopefully not a sign that Fénix is set for the Escobar then nothing run we've seen before. No harm in establishing the lad, giving him a bit of time to run the ropes, whatever. Just, you know, a feud with Santos feels a bit like a modern-day Ziggler feud. Like, you get promoted in, you have your feud with him, but we don't have any ideas for you, and then just fade away. I mean, Rey Fénix is far, far too good, and maybe given the certain injuries that appear on SmackDown, maybe the spot will be definitely there for Fénix, but well, hopefully this is just a little mini thing to keep him, like, focused on television through the WrestleMania and the aftermath of WrestleMania little season. Kevin Owens, well, that sucks. Nick Aldis gave KO the stage to make his sucky announcement 2 weeks out from WrestleMania and his body's given up on him and he needs neck surgery. He doesn't know when he'll be back, but the match with Orton is obviously off. In true Canadian fashion, saying he's sorry before hugging with Aldis and stepping out the apron. I hear voices. It's Randy time. Aldis apologised and took an RKO for his troubles, sending social media into Nick Aldis at WrestleMania. Immediate reaction, like, whoa, hold your horses for a second. It's just an RKO to an authority figure. Don't get upset if they announce something else. Calm down, calm down. And onto the other notes. We finally got our big lad last man standing match between Braun Strowman and Jacob Fatu. I feel bad for putting this big boy bash in the other notes, but I decided to give Flair and Stratton the space. So in order to let that breathe, fortunately, the big boys just kind of get a quick blow over. Aside from Fénix's debut, this was the one match that seemed to get a proper reaction from the crowd. A fun old plunder with a large gentleman charging about. Big pop for Fatu win as well. They've done a great job bubbling that man up since Sokoa's story with Roman Reigns. And I've even started to enjoy Sokoa on the screen. He's seen the kind of stuff that he's doing. It's all feeding into making Jacob Fatu. Suddenly I can get behind that. Suddenly I can get behind the Sokoa character when he's not the main character. Drew McIntyre gave an eye patch promo in front of a green screen post-apocalyptic background. Hopefully not AI-generated. WWE have, recently showed that they're fine to do that. LA Knight beat Tama Tonga as we continue to set up the United States Championship multi-man. The man's kind of gotten over through his pairing with Jacob Fatu, even though he came out with Solo here. Sokoa used for a failed interference angle and the pin. There was an announcement for a women's tag team gauntlet match to give Liv and Raquel something to do on the WrestleMania stage. And also, speaking of tag, the men's tags, Motor City Machine Guns faced DIY in a number one contenders bout. We're in the final couple of weeks, so it's time to take this multi-man team set up home. Turnbuckle Shenanigans and Sabin snatch the win. As it stands, Motor City Machine Guns are facing the Profits at WrestleMania. Whilst Pretty Deadly, they set up a match with Miz and Mello. It's like, Oh, come on. Come on, guys. You want to make Melo a big deal. This isn't it. This really ain't it. This is pushing him right down to like a base level. Like, Jesus Christ, what are we doing here? And finally, B-Fab faced Naomi, giving the newly heel lass a stage to get jumped by Cargill. Like the kind of repeat of last week where it was Cargill's time. Naomi did the jump. This time Naomi's one who gets jumped and then has to compete. But then we got to see how the caution tape version of Naomi flowed. Aldis officially made their match for WrestleMania. Yeah, I was thinking with this one, even though it's in the other notes, I'll let it be the final note that I say for SmackDown. We'll end on a positive. Naomi vs. Jade Cargill at WrestleMania, the first ever women's singles match not for a title on the WrestleMania stage. And you know what? Suddenly, I started with a negative for SmackDown, but we end on a positive. So yeah, it was a fine episode of SmackDown. The biggest whiplash for me was returning and then just getting just quiet crowds. Just like, oh, I'll talk about it with the Monday Night Raw show, but they just did not react to the odd stuff. Chicago here at least were like hot for their guys. They were hot for Phoenix. They were hot for the Big Lad match. They were hot for CM Punk. They weren't like quiet. Like the Monday crowd at times, they're just like so quiet for the stuff. It was an absolutely fine show where there are people, obviously the crowds are really invested in the main event angles and things. And seeing Bay Phoenix was a nice little lecture for them. But none of that took the news. None of that mattered. But not like Raw was able to bring focus back to the Roman Reigns, CM Punk, Seth Rollins stuff. It's like, even though all the talk coming out of SmackDown was obviously Flair and Stratton, Monday Night Raw just kept that focus on doing the build. Apart from Tony Hinchcliffe. An absolute dud. We'll get to that. But first, as we jump over to Monday Night Raw, live on Netflix from Minneapolis, Minnesota, we'll start with the World Heavyweight Championship, Gunther and Jey Uso. It's finally heated up. Let's jump on over into Monday Night Raw.
Because at WrestleMania, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you for me. I'm going to get you for Jimmy. I'm going to get you for my whole damn family. And I will take the World Heavyweight Championship.
After last week's Bloody Monday, this feud finally has the fire to burn with the penultimate Raw before Mania. But hey, the point is to use these months to find a way to make me care about the match in Las Vegas, and they finally did it, just in time. Jey Uso out immediately after the Austrians, gloating posing. No yeeting, no brightly coloured merch or high-fiving of kids, all serious in his chain and black tank top. Scowling with his fists clenched on the way down. Like, hey, I wouldn't trust the people of Minneapolis either. Keep those fists clenched. Uso just slapped the mic out of the champion's hand before asking Gunther about his mother. He tried to quiet the crowd down because they were just obviously doing the yeet between every single rhythmic pause every single time. And he tried to he would put his hand up to the crowd like being like, no, like, it's not time for this. Most of the crowd listened. Well, maybe not the first time, but like the second time, most of the crowd had listened. Certain pockets just wanted to chant yeet, didn't give a shit. And other pockets never stopped. And he got to a point where some of the crowd would just like laugh at them being like, come on, dude, like, obviously this is not the time to be doing a yeet thing. Obviously. How have you not read the room? He's actively told you, just stop for a second. Actively told you. Uso getting emotional talking about lying to his mum about why he didn't save his brother from the beating last week. But that brutal attack was Gunter's biggest mistake, because Jay's no longer afraid. Showing him the beating was actually the exact thing to ignite the man. Before WrestleMania, hug and kiss your family. The night before, I'm going to ask for forgiveness for the man I'm about to become. The perfect response for Jey. Gunther got his fire last week, and this elevated the challenger right up there, exactly how they needed to. The presentation of the segment as well, all of it just lent into that serious vibe for Jey Uso. The way he interacted with the crowd, there's lots of little notes where it just all fed into. Jey Uso is that he's, what happened last week has shifted him a gear into something else. And Gunther sold it really well. Just the expression on his face of, ah, shit. Being just like, because he came out gloating and posing with the crowd, and by the end of the segment, he's looking at Jey Uso almost, I wouldn't call it respect, but it's the first time he looks at him somewhat as an equal in his entire feud. It's the first time he actually sees that fire, and maybe we'll get that addressed next week. This week was basically just setting that up as a mistake has been made. I feel like to lift Gunther up again next week, because you kind of want Jey to be a little bit of the underdog going to show itself, you can have Gunther just talking about that that's the exact fire he wanted to see. And now he's going to beat him at WrestleMania anyway. Finish proving his point. There's a very good segment to set up a like final delivery home segment. But such a perfect follow-up to last week. Especially as it would have been so, so easy just to have Gunther just do a gloat and then Jey Uso come out and make a promise. But the way that the whole thing played out, just to end with that expression from Gunther, I thought it was so, so needed for this feud as well. I talked about last week's angle being needed because there was just like no heat. Whilst this time was all about elevating Jey Uso up to Gunther. And it's mostly just Gunther's reactions to what Jey Uso is saying. saying. You compare this to the first Stratton segment. It's like, look at the amount of work Gunter is doing to make Jey Uso seem like a credible threat to his title. Through his expressions alone, the way that he's reacting to what Uso is saying. I'll be disappointed next week if they just do a thing of Gunter is scared, he's made a big mistake, and now we might actually pay for it. I'd rather that's not the case. That's why I like next week, just the idea of Gunter coming out, being like, this is what I wanted to see. You are now a worthy challenger. I like that idea. But let's then swing into the main event. I promised I would talk about the Rollins Punk Reigns things in a bit more detail after the Raw thing. For this segment, was all about Paul Heyman and Seth Rollins. The main event promo segment, the aftermath of Smacker's show-ending reveal. The contradiction that is Heyman's inability to be disloyal to either Punk or Roman, reinforced before Sethy Boo's music and fire pyro hit. Rollins straight up asked whose side the man is going to be on, but he's had a realization. Paul's on neither. Seth, the man who Reigns was never able to trick onto his side because he always truly read the intent. CM Punk isn't much better either. He only agreed to help at Survivor Series in return for the favour he is now extorting. Rollins trying to convince the wise man that neither of his clients have his best interests at heart. The stage now set. Seth teased a way to take Paul out of the equation. Remove him from the situation. Heyman stood up for himself when Rollins started putting on hands, but that was the excuse he needed to properly go at it when CM Punk's music finally hit. So we've had threats from both Roman Reigns and SmackDown, and now Seth Rollins on here on Raw, pushing Heyman into a corner, looking like they're about to do a beating, then out comes CM Punk to make the save. Punk and Rollins dance around ringside towards steel step danger, but back into the ring. Punk caught a sudden stomp, and there was Heyman checking over Punk. Rollins then, in the corner, ran in and feigned a stomp before picking up the mic and ending with, "Now you owe me a favour." The note that then sent us off the air, Rollins spared Heyman. And the crowd just happily sang his song again. A very, very heel note. Anyway, both SmackDown and Monday Night Raw painted Punk as the only pure babyface in this promo. Like, hey, maybe SmackDown's time to also paint Punk as a bit of a dick, given that he just painted Roman on Smackers and Rollins here on Monday Night Raw, just showing their tendencies of what they could possibly do. But after all that, the crowd just started going, whoa. Like, didn't give a shit. It's like, yay, the music's playing. Oh, modern WWE crowds. Look at me, a European complaining that a crowd just wanted to sing a song. No, that's our thing. You can't stick that promise. That's ours. I mean, the crowds are so into every single beat of this stuff. Like, every single beat of all of these segments, the crowd are just, like, doing the oh reaction so perfectly. It's taking, like, very little effort to get them into the palm of their hands. They are so into this drama. And I don't read that as a kind of just like a WWE fan reaction thing. It feels like, no, for the way that they, it's not like a conditioned reaction thing. They are genuinely invested. And I say, good for them. Good for them. Sure, it's like not the, for me, I'm not like massively invested really. It's going to be a fun main event, but it's not like something where I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait to see it. But clearly it is for some people. It's clearly working. I think it's just too much. Like, every single week there's got to be like a drama line or a twist or a like hook or something to tune in for next time. It's a bit much, but it's fine. What doesn't help is it's happening at the exact same time on Dynamite. I'm seeing just absolutely incredible work from Hangman Page and Swerve. Just seeing just the level of storytelling and just the way that they are conveying their relationship. Then I jump over to SmackDown and it's so dramatic. I don't mean that in a like a positive way either. I mean it more in almost like a Spanish soap opera kind of way. Just a pure, just over the top. So every show's got to end on that big twist line or something with this rivalry. And I expect there to be two more, at least. SmackDown, like, they'll be having a rest before Mania, but yeah, you got a SmackDown and you got a Raw to do two more twist reveals or something else you haven't thought about to make you feel different. They're also not putting any of the three of them in any match of any sort. Same with Cody and John Cena. Like, keep them well away from in-ring action. Make sure they are fit for WrestleMania. They're not even risking it. Not going to take any form of risk whatsoever. But I do expect there is more brawls. I've had my fill of brawls with this rivalry, but we're going to get more. I feel like it's the only thing they could possibly do on the final night for WrestleMania, as Heyman's looking around at each of them going, I don't know who to choose. Something like that. I told you it was dramatic. It's building up to a very, very dramatic Monday Night Raw angle. And by that, I mean pure acting. If you can't tell, I think it's going to be a bit shit. Anyway, the final segment I wanted to talk about in detail, and want is probably a strong word. The Raw Tag Team Championship, War Raiders versus The New Day, with Tony Hinchcliffe on commentary. Just, Also, Big E's the best. Get this Nazi comedian off my screen. Like, imagine being Kofi and Xavier, knowing that this piece of shit is going to be commentating on your match. And fuck, he's so dull. His jokes are worse than Lawler's 90s quips. Like, we're talking worse than Art Donovan. How much does he weigh? worse than him. I can't remember which show that was, if you don't know what I'm referencing. Surely somebody's that, like, made a quip. I think OSW, when they covered that show, they made, like, a little segment of just all of his quips, because they were so shit. Or all of the number of times he asked how much a wrestler weighed or something. I think they did that. But he was always going to be divisive, like, which is why you don't fucking book him on your show aimed at a wide demographic of people. You're going to split your audience. You're forcing your audience to answer the question whether they're fine with this guy, when the best circumstance are, what are AEW doing with all of the political climate that's happening right now? Fuck all. Nothing. Nothing at all whatsoever. It doesn't exist in their world. It's an escape from it. Monday Night Raw or WWE, every single week, or was there something last week? But like most weeks, there's been something, either right-wing political or something, which is full-on, is like a thing you cannot escape from the current political climate. And it's every single week. I watch AEW and I don't have to think about it. Here we are once again, and I'm talking about that. Yeah, sure, I mucked up for the first week with Andrew Schultz, who's another right-wing, for God's sake, kind of guy. But yeah, the guy who made the joke about the Puerto Rico people being trash on your show, and you're getting your commentators to laugh at him. Pat tried his best. Like, he told his shit jokes that weren't landing. And apparently he's known as a roast comedian. I say that because he's not a name outside of America. Never heard of him. And to be fair, when after doing the Puerto Rico line at Madison Square Garden, at their essentially what was a Nazi rally, people in my country didn't remember his name. And if it wasn't for social media pointing out who he was, like, when they announced him, I probably wouldn't have remembered that was him. But, like, Jesus Christ. He was so bad here. I think that's my main takeaway, is if you're aiming at a wide demographic of people, he is not a good hire. He's not a good hire. If you are purposefully leaning more right wing, he's a great hire. If this is all on purpose, if you are purposely leaning into that, and sure, that WWE head of creative was sat behind Linda McMahon as she was sworn into the Trump regime. Like, sure, you can read into certain things. Like, oh yeah, it makes sense. It tracks. It totally tracks. Triple H was sat right behind her as she was talking about defunding schools for teaching Black history. He was right behind her, happy that his family member had gotten into the White House, showing his support as she said such heinous shit. Then then it tracks. Suddenly Tony Hinchcliffe being brought to this show makes sense. However, what it doesn't make sense for is your audience. WWE is such a large Latino audience. It's a large audience of, like, people of colour, which is why on their product they haven't really lent into stuff. Bix did a great little article just talking about this stuff. So it happens to be on my mind as I was watching this segment. Just talking about how WWE just haven't really openly done political stuff on their shows. But it feels like the past month, this stuff has started to bleed in. And for hiring this guy, because I'm not talking about the performance here and to the jokes of what he said, but simply just hiring this guy forces the fans who know who he is, it forces them to answer a question. And wherever they fall on that side, he's a divisive character. So the fix, don't fucking hire him. You're forcing your fans to answer a question. Why would you even force them to do that? Anyway, the match itself, like, it was fine. It was all right. It was all an angle to do a staging for a DQ and post-match beat down by Kingston and Woods. So it was one of those ones. But somebody hilariously quipped on Blue Sky that there was that Tony Hinchcliffe was out there successfully convincing people to sell their tickets. He was so bad. And someone sat reporting that the word from backstage was that this was a dud. He was a complete dud. Then his line against Big E, just like, oh, congrats, you brought politics into your product again and split your audience. Just, it's easy. It's an easy fix. Don't book him. Because you know what he's going to be like. Anyway, the final other notes. A return to the US and we were right back in front of fans sitting on their hands during a Bayley match. I kind of forgot that the undying love for that woman is just a European thing. You go back to America and she's treated as just another person on the show. That said, the slot that they were given on the show, oh, that was shit. A Bayley versus Lyra Valkyria for the Women's Intercontinental Championship. Both entrances during the international Netflix exclusive ad break. Neither last being featured during the walk-ins either. That should just tell you the level of importance this match was staged on, given it felt like a match that was getting through it really, really quickly, given no time. After a hot segment, just treat like a nothing first contest to kind of get the fans into wrestling action in a way, and they responded in kind. The pacing of the show told you not to care about this, and the fans were like, oh, and EO and her WrestleMania opponents opened the show to finally make the triple threat official. Sky the one to get the final say as they continue to put that effort in to not make her feel like the Seth Rollins last year extra wheel. Penta had a match against Dom Mysterio, but go and watch Bron Breakker's interference and an all-time great spear right now. It is amazing. The way he launches like a dart, does like a front flip after the impact, charging down the ramp, like, it's an incredible spear. And I think WWE put out a slow-mo video for it as well. We'll watch it in real time first. And finally, the LWO faced El Grande Americano and the Creeds to set up the WrestleMania singles match between the fake luchador legend and the actual one in Ray Ray. And honestly, I haven't turned back onto this segment since the Gulf of America gag that they did at the Glasgow show. That just immediately, it's kind of turned me off from the feud. And it has not successfully used that stuff to make me feel like Rey Mysterio is angry at that. It feels just more like anger at the creative decisions to do this is kind of how I'm feeling about it. I'm not feeling my anger towards a character, I'm feeling my anger towards the writer that's doing it. But in terms of, like, as I'm watching it, where's my dislike feeling? Like, I'm not disliking Grande Americano. It didn't help that he was in his hometown. That didn't help. Chad Gable. He's obviously going to get cheered by his own people. But I'm not going, that disrespectful guy, El Grande Americano. I'm just being like, he's just more shit from this creative team. Just leaning into a right-wing thing to do this. Like, ugh. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the week. Perfectly fine shows. The crowd are so into the most of the big matches for WrestleMania. Just Flair and Stratton. I feel like people will be interested to see what happens on SmackDown, but I've got this big worry. And maybe when it comes to WrestleMania itself, they will turn it on. However, it's very, very concerning to watch a segment like that and one of the people just stopped dancing and left their partner astray. That is concerning to see live on television. Obviously, they've got time to figure all this stuff out backstage and whatever caused the blow-up. I've got no idea, obviously, so I can't read into that. I'm not going to make any assumptions or whatever because I just don't know. But yeah, nothing more like Raw. Yes, one of them helps refocus to what like the actual main stories they were doing. But the whole Tony Hinchcliffe thing, that then took over. So just don't book him. Just don't. I know why they've done it, but also totally disagree on the business decision to do it. The sheer number of fans you have that would be against this kind of guy. So it's a divisive decision. And why would you want to split your fans? Surely you want your fans to be together in their love for the product of WWE. Why would you do something to split them? It's so strange. I mean, it's not strange given that current regime is doing. But still. Anyway, I need to stop rabbiting on. This recording is already getting long enough as it is. Feels like one which is going to be this normal regular time for you lot, but I'm staring down the barrel of a way too long edit. So anyway, I'll be back this time next week to talk about the final shows before WrestleMania. Well, the penultimate SmackDown and the final Raw before WrestleMania. For me, it's a final Raw. If I'm like they have the SmackDown before WrestleMania with like the Battle Royal and things like that as well. I won't be covering them. I might quickly mention somebody won it. But rather than that, WrestleMania Night 1 and 2 will take precedent. But thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never taken for granted. Jump on over to Social Suplex to read the newsletter. Link is in the description of this podcast, wherever you've listened to it from. Please do check out the other shows and always thank Dickie. With that, see you next week, where we'll continue to talk about WWE so you don't have to watch it. With that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.